Here's my top footy tip for the season. You can get your games live and ad-free on the ABC Listen app.
That's insatiable.
I know, right? AFL, NRL, men's, women's. Whatever footy you're after, we've got you covered.
Kicks him on the leg, he does, he bounces it through.
Every goal, try, mark and tackle. Called by ABC Sports expert commentary team.
How did he do it? Game, set, bingo.
This season on the home of 100% pure footy, the ABC Listen app.
For your Monday right here on ABC Sport. Of course, you can catch up in the podcast store under the Best of ABC Sport folder or through the ABC Listen app. Just search Corbin and Ben in a little magnifying glass and you can find us anytime at your convenience. We're also on every Monday and Thursday at this time, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's great to have you with us. Round 8 is done. Another record-setting weekend on so many fronts. Felt like the footy was a little slow to get started in the new season, but gee, it delivered in round 8. There's a whole lot to chop up. Our Mad Mondays with Murph on the way with the Carlton 300 gamer Mark Murphy. My name's Corbin Middlemass. My name is in the title of the show. And the other guy who is with me across the other side of the desk is Ben Cameron. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corb. Good to see you. I've got some feedback for you. Corbin and Ben family hit me up.
Yeah.
And they referenced your put five on it from last week. Your favourite themed rounds.
Positive feedback, I'm sure.
Negative. You might have overlooked one.
Oh, no.
Gather round's a themed round, surely. I completely omitted gather round.
Just completely missed it.
Yeah.
Gather round clearly gets the nod over. I think I even had opening round in there trying to flesh it out.
No, gather round goes ahead of opening round, doesn't it?
And a few others. Mm. I think it might clean bowl Easter. So Easter goes to the fifth seed. We've got gather round at least fourth. Then what did I have? I think I had Sir Doug Nicholls round Anzac Day. And what I had, the heritage round up top.
Mm. We want heritage round back.
We do. So that's why I gave it such heavy weighting. Gather round is good. Mm. I've actually just been researching Sir Doug Nicholls round. I had to do a little article today, Ben, for the ABC newsletter. So if you subscribe to that, look out for my piece in the next couple of weeks about Sir Doug Nicholls round. So I don't want to push that down my ratings because that's named after a very important figure in Australian life.
No doubt.
Not just in the world of footy. And it is a great weekend now that it's spread over too. Speaking of great weekends, Ben, as the old school broadcaster would love to say, four games decided by under 10 points. In fact, 8 points or less. Four games. And a record-setting weekend again crowd-wise. It is
unbelievable.
The third most attended round in the history of the game. So, obviously underpinned by what happened on Friday night, in which we had the biggest Carlton-Collingwood crowd since 1981. And without trying to spruik too much on behalf of the game here, but we're 9 weeks into the season, really eight and a half with opening round to begin. And we've had the top three most attended rounds in history already this season. So, last weekend was the second best. This weekend's the third best. And way back in round one, we had the most attended round ever. So, well over 400,000 across the nine games.
And we've got a pretty good one coming up, don't we? I mean, you spoke about this to me this morning. Just how good next week looks.
So, we got two games on the Friday night. Starts on Thursday. And then, I think, three on the Saturday slate, or four on the Saturday slate, two on Sunday, given that it's Mother's Day. But this is beautiful how it's panned out. And you can't make this up if you're the AFL. The top eight all play each other, which means the bottom 10 all play each other. So we've got five bottom 10 matchups, four top eight matchups. And of the four top eight games, Ben, they're four of the first five games of the round. So it's heavily front-ended.
It's like a front-loaded contract.
Amazing. So you don't have to wait long for the good stuff. Thursday night, you'll be at the G, Carlton, Melbourne. What a game that's going to be. Friday night, we got two games on, so you can basically follow one into the other. Port Adelaide make the trip down to Sleepy Hollow to play the Cats. And then over in Perth, it is Fremantle and Sydney. My preseason pick, by the way, Ben, for the premiership. They're looking the goods at the moment, the Swans. I did have them beating Brisbane in the grand final, though. I've decided to try and omit that half, but I'm just going to lean into the Swans. And then on Saturday, a really interesting game for the Bombers. They played GWS, who were coming off a loss. Just how good are Essendon going? And so all of that before you get to Saturday night.
I don't want to throw too much shade at David King, but he told us the other week, Corbin, didn't he? Last week, only three teams could win the premiership.
They went 0-3.
Yeah, all three of them lost. So who did he have? He had Carlton. GWS, Carlton, and Geelong.
Yes.
And all three of them lost on the weekend.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's changed his mind.
I think he was leaning into that last night. As I touched on the weekend, Ben, do you know the great thing about footy at the moment? So I wrote these numbers down. After round 16 last year. Carlton were in the bottom four. Yeah. They ended up making the final four. Round 16.
They very nearly made the final two, the Blues.
Round 16, we're in June. Like, it's freezing cold. We're not far away from the end of the regular season. And the sides that were above them, so it often gets emphasised just how low the Blues were. Blues were 15th. Giants were 14th, who were a point away from playing in a grand final. And the Swans were 13th, who came home with a wet sail. So as much as we love to say, oh, it's Darnham, can't see many changes in the eight, and historically that was how it was, in recent times, given how long the season has been, teams could come in and out of form two or three times before we get to September. There's so long to go in this season as we sit here at the start of May.
Totally agree. It's a great example that the season will rumble on and we'll see some changes.
The other thing is to mention how good the weekend was, Ben. Feel-good stories all over the place.
Yep.
Lachie Sullivan on Friday night. Yep. I saw one of the other radio broadcasters. I know people are sitting there thinking, geez, someone else called the footy. Apparently there are other stations there, but I know for all of us, we have our radios arc-welded on the ABC, so all we get to listen to is our coverage of the footy. But did I see you in the background when Lachie Sullivan kicked a goal? You're in the background of one of the other networks' social media channels, and you just unflinching reaction, just put your hands up above your head and gave it the double cobras.
It was kind of like Jamie Elliott's mark the week before, how you could see it coming. I could see like a few disposals out. Oh, he's getting on the end of this. He's going to have a shot for goal. And I was fortunate enough, I got invited to the Western Bulldogs Best and Fairest last year.
Cool.
And he spoke a little bit about his journey there. He won the VFL Best and Fairest for Footscray.
Yep.
And his desire to play AFL.
Second one.
Yeah, and how hard he's worked. So I'd sort of written the story. I knew of it heading into the night. And to see him get rewarded in that moment, I love people who won't take no for an answer and bet on themselves. And to see him graduate to succeeding playing AFL and kicking a goal with his first kick, I loved it. It was just a natural reaction. I was pumped for him. Yeah. Good on him.
It's a similar story to yourself, Ben. I was just going to do a show called Corbin, and you forced your way in, and we had to put your name in the title as well. But it never gave up on the chance to be
Lachie
here.
Lachie and I look each other eye to eye. Like, yes. He's a diminutive character. I was actually down in the Collingwood rooms on Friday night, and someone sort of brushed past me, and then I heard all this cheering, and I realised it was Lachie Sullivan brushing past me to go see his family, and they were celebrating.
You thought they were just Corbin and Ben listeners.
we are taking strides
on the up and up. The trajectory is high.
Good on him. So it was an awesome moment for Lachie Sullivan,
and that says nothing of Rory Sloane's retirement. Gets chaired off, sings a song with the Crows. Kelsha Deer, son of the late Paul Deer. What an emotional debut it was for him. Kicked two goals, including a big-time goal in the final term. Had his jumper presented by James Morrissey, three-time Hawthorn Premiership player, of course, Premiership teammate of his late father.
Yeah.
Mum comes back from London to be there. That was such a good story yesterday. And Logan Morris, who I'm sure we're going to get to as well up in Brisbane. So a whole lot for us to work through here on Corbin and Ben after what was a really good round of footy. This is Corbin and Ben, and what we do every Monday, Ben, is we look at all the key issues from the weekend and we work out what's worth fleshing out and what is simply worth throwing out. Oh, it's a hot start to this very crisp segment. Western Bulldogs in crisis. Flesh it out, throw it out.
Yeah, flesh it out. Let's flesh it out. Kylie Watson-Wheeler, the chair, who we don't hear an awful lot from.
No.
Was on ABC Radio Melbourne today and had this to say.
Look, I mean, I think it's too early in the season for us to panic or to make rash decisions. But we're always coming together as a club and we're always discussing where we're at. Does the playing group have what they need? Are the right decisions being made? So this is not something that you just jump in on when you have a bad loss or a loss that you're supposed to or you think that you should have won. These conversations are happening constantly and consistently, and we're always assessing where we're at as a club and what we need to be doing. And so I think, the important thing is that it's not about panicking or particularly listening to external narratives. You really need to focus on what's happening within your club.
Is there panic?
No, there's not panic. No, definitely not.
So I tweeted some of those comments today, and I must admit, the backlash and strength of the commentary from the Western Bulldog fans was really strong and even surprised me a little bit. They are very frustrated with Luke Beveridge in particular and where their club is at.
The two interesting things clearly in what she said there were, do the players have what they need? Are the right decisions being made?
Yeah.
It just I mean, she absolutely hit the nail on the head. And they're the two questions that everybody's asking at the moment. So I understand that the board's asking those questions. And to me, they sound like two questions that are clearly centered around the senior coach.
Yeah. So are the right decisions being made that we look at selection immediately? Yep. So Bailey Dale, sub left out, Caleb Daniel left out. It feels like there's weird selections being made.
Yep.
And then are other players getting what they need? Clearly is a reflection of the coach.
Well, we've spoken a lot about the Amit Bains interview. So he was on with you guys a couple of weeks ago. And he said it repeatedly over the last year and a half. He believes his team's a top four, top eight type team. Where did you have them at the start of the year?
I had them around the eight.
Around the eight.
But part of that is, it, and this is what was referenced by the Bulldogs fans, is they feel like it's been it's longitudinal, that they have seen this not over eight weeks to start this season. They have seen this now over the last 18 months. They missed the finals last year. They've never finished top four under Luke Beveridge.
Yep.
So he can get them up and they can go on these runs, but are they consistently a good enough side to really be perennial challenges? We haven't seen that, and that seems to be frustrating a lot of the Bulldogs fans.
They got a lot of All-Australians, a lot of guys that are solid in their position. And I think that in itself is a reflection of them. So people probably look at their list and go, yeah, it's a pretty good list, but there's something not quite right there, so I'll discount them.
Yeah.
The same way that we look at St Kilda and we go, it's not a great list, but they got Ross Lyon and they generally get the most out of what they've got. It feels like the opposite with the Dogs, that you almost knock them down a few pegs rather than put them up the same way you would with a team like St Kilda.
You've summed it up in a way that I couldn't, which is why it's the beautiful yin and yang of Corbin and Ben here on the show. But yeah, it does feel like they're less than the sum of their parts, aren't they?
100%.
Whereas Ross Lyon's able to get this magical alchemy that really becomes a multiplication symbol of their elements rather than a subtraction.
I think we mentioned David King once already today, haven't we? He spoke last night about the Damien Hardwick stepping down at Richmond last year. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago here about Leon Cameron and his early exit from the Giants.
Amicable split.
I just sort of felt like, look, this is going to end early, that once he realises that this group's not going to make finals, then it will just come to a natural conclusion. People that seem to know Bevo well will say, look, he's not that personality type, but I don't know. I know he's contracting until the end of next season. If he's still coaching them the way they're going right now in round 24 next year, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like they're long for each other. I mean, he's been there for a long time now. He's obviously taken them to a place that no one else has done in 70 years. So it's a special place for him in Footscray history. But it just feels like it's
run its course.
Yeah.
Can I say something that I think will sound like it's me being derogatory towards Luke Beveridge, but I don't mean it as such.
You're not going to get us in trouble, are you?
No, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, and it feels like he is a great motivator at his best and a man manager. Whether the actual nuts and bolts, X's and O's, strategic planning, maximising what you have, I'm not sure that's his goal as much as it is, for example, Ross Lyon, who has his cons too. He seems to wear people out, has a used-by date on his time at a club.
He did say he's optimistic they can still win more than they lose. They play Richmond this weekend, who have an injury list as long as your arm.
Yep.
They best not be losing that, having lost to Hawthorn, the Dogs losing four of their last five. Some other news that came through over the weekend, Ben. Jamara Ugle-Hagan, perhaps the most prized signature in the game. If anything, this didn't receive as much credit as it should, given the fact that they then go on and lose on field. But he re-signs with the Bulldogs for another 2 years. Are we fleshing it out or throwing it out?
Yeah, flesh it out. I mean, arguably the hottest prospect in terms of a wanted signature. You could argue around some others like Errol Goulden and Nick Dacos, and obviously Harley Reid is going to enter that conversation moving forward. But this felt like an endorsement of Luke Beveridge, at least from Jamara. They seem to have a close relationship, and particularly when you look at some of the offers that were reportedly on the table for Mara.
We basically signed a $1 million deal to stay, and that would have been that's the starting point.
Per season?
Yep.
Yep.
That's my understanding.
Yep.
Yeah, or from the reports.
Yep.
People that know it much closer than I do. Interestingly, the two biggest offers that were reported were Hawthorn and Richmond. After re-signing, they play Hawthorn and Richmond in back-to-back weeks. So he just got a look at the Hawks on the weekend and probably thought, damn, look what they're doing over there. They beat the Dogs for the second straight game, despite the fact they're well and truly in development mode. And then they play Richmond this week. So Mara will get a look at him. But at least for the next 2 years, he'll be at the kennel. And you get the feeling if he's signing for $1 million now, the next one you're looking at, what, 1.3, 1.4, who knows? By the time the cap keeps going up and up, he could I think I said earlier in the year, if every player was off contract right now, you would still just about want Jamari Ugle-Hagan more than anybody else, given the trajectory that he's on and what he's already shown.
It could really be a blank check, perhaps, if you can sort out his goal kicking. Like, he needs to go see whoever Harry Mackay went and saw and sort out something similar, because if he can sort that, he'll be...
And he didn't have a good day yesterday. No. He's been away for a couple of weeks for personal reasons. You don't know what's going on in the young man's life, but it wasn't a red-hot day for him yesterday. James Sicily's tantrum. This was after the wizard Watson made an error down the stretch, missed a goal he should have kicked from the top of the goal square. Are we fleshing it out or throwing it out?
I will flesh it out. I didn't have a big issue with it. I thought it was mildly humorous, the way he sort of... He did look very much like a toddler who you just said, look, you've got to share the toy with Corbin.
Yeah.
And if that was toddler Ben, he was throwing his arms around and jumping up and down on the spot, but...
Also known as a Monday in our office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should have finished it, shouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he made an error. And luckily, it didn't cost them in the end. Do you know what? I didn't notice it at the ground. So I was too busy sort of with my head in my hands myself thinking, how on earth did he miss that? But what I did notice was James Sicily put his big boy pants on, lift them right up and go there and win the game for the Hawks. Sam Mitchell, inspired move. Mm. So put Sicily forward. In the Adam Hunter role, swinging from back into attack. And then the first time they've done it all year, he scored the last 7 points of the game. They won the match by 7 points. Love that.
Just on that finish as well, like maybe not the little check side out of the boot, straighten up, nail a drop punt. I know I'm going to sound like Jason Dunstall.
I was going to say, I think he clearly thought there was a bit of perceived pressure then. He was under more pressure than what he probably was. Ken Hinckley taking ownership for Connor Rosie's injury. Flesh it out, throw it out.
It's been covered. I'm going to throw that out.
Don't mind it. Craig McRae on AFL Saturday here on ABC Sport, saying that Carlton did not want the smoke. Flesh it out, throw it out.
They did not want the smoke. Flesh it out. This was a surprising comment from Craig McRae. Let's have a listen.
I honestly don't think it's that hard for these guys in terms of they thrive on it. And their game style does suit it. Like, it's a pretty simple game plan. You know, it's to get some territory and turn up and put pressure on it. You notice when you have play teams that don't want you to have pressure, they start kicking the ball around. That's what Carlton did last night. Yep. They didn't want pressure, so they started to maintain possession of the ball, and Hawthorn did that against us too. So you can't always get it on your team. I think last week, Essendon, her pressure was low because they maintained possession by foot. So it may not always look like that, but you're spot on. We've got to find different ways to win. And we did that really well last year, and we're finding a way to do that again this year.
Probably didn't set it up that well. The question was around how do you get the team to apply that kind of pressure for four quarters? And as he touched on there, he sort of mentioned that teams like Carlton and Hawthorn, they panicked and they kicked the ball around and we benefited.
You don't often hear a coach speaking like that about the opposition, which is why it was so eyebrow-raising. I realised Carlton were on in about midway through the first quarter. Broadcast wing, Nick Dacos made two big efforts, big tackles, and Bo McCreary came in and helped him out. And I thought, gee whiz, like, I think he cops too much flack for, people saying, oh, he's soft, trying to pick holes in his game. He is not. But he had seven tackles. That moment, I thought, gee, they're really on tonight, the Pies. Also, Craig McRae, wide-ranging, beautiful interview.
It was.
Great interview. Asked Mick for advice. It was wholesome. What I really liked out of it, Corbin, this is self-congratulatory, but he spoke about reading Pat Riley's book and speaking about the disease of Moore. Round four, I was broadcasting the Friday night game or Thursday night game, and I spoke about Collingwood and whether they have the disease of Moore and Pat Riley speaking about it. And you guys all make fun of me for the fact that I am a bookworm and that I read. That was a win for Ben's book club. I was ahead of the game.
Me too.
Referenced that.
Me too.
And Craig McRae was already reading the book.
And sometimes, Ben, if you don't toot your own horn, there's no music. So we like that. AFL Saturday. Where can I find it if I want to listen to that?
You go to the ABC Listen app. Just type in AFL Saturday where there's the little magnifying glass.
AFL space Saturday. Yep.
And what
then
a show.
You can listen to the whole thing with myself, Luke Ball, and Mick Malthouse every Saturday, appropriately as the title suggests. Which was the best goal on the weekend? Flesh it out, throw it out.
Throw it out. We'll speak about that with Murph.
Yep. Mark Murphy coming up right here on Corbin and Ben. Is 3 weeks the right sanction for Callum Brown's bump on Tom McCartan? Flesh it out, throw it out.
Flesh it out. Yeah, you hate MRO, Chad.
I do.
Very quickly, it feels about right.
Yep, it's in line with Toby Green and Peter Wright. It's in fact, one lighter than what Peter Wright got.
Yeah.
It feels like if you can cuss someone, you're going to be looking at three or four. Bump to the head, and even though it's split second, and you know my thoughts around that, that's the AFL are going to hold someone accountable, as Brad Scott said, if somebody is concussed on the field. The Gold Coast Suns looked like boys against men in the Q Clash. Flesh it out, throw it out.
Flesh this out. Now, every younger brother, Corbin, would know the moment. I mean, you go through years of copying a beating at the hands of your older sibling, and then like this, bang, it changes, and it never happens again. That moment will come. Last night was not it. They were out-muscled by a better, more mature, more superior side last night.
Played a team with two on the bench and a guy who was playing his second game for the day.
Couldn't run it down.
Could not get close. Lost by 34 points. Never looked like winning at any one stage. So they're 4-4, Ben. They've played four games at Carrara. They're 4-0. They've played four games away from Carrara. They're 0-4.
Damien Hardwick, pre-game, stopped just short of saying we hate each other. He said, oh, look, hate's a really strong word, but they don't like each other. I mean, we don't like each other. I'm a part of it now. But, yeah, there's a bit of ill feeling there, ill will.
I reckon people sometimes look at Brisbane and the Gabba as a venue and they kind of think similar to, like, the Adelaide Oval or Perth Stadium or something. One, the ground doesn't actually hold that many. So even the finals last year they played there, it's only 36,000, which is fewer than, like, the old Subiaco Oval, for example, would fit. Last night they had 30,285 and was seen as a raging success. It was a Sunday night game ahead of the public holiday today. Biggest crowd ever for a Q Clash. And that's it, 30,000. So I think it's a win. Well done. It's helped the attendance along. But, yeah, 30,000 were there last night for the Q Clash. I don't mind the Sunday night slot. I must admit, I called during the day. We had a Thursday night game, so it probably felt a little bit like, you know, there was lots of footy. But I like it. Proper Sunday night footy, especially when it bumps into a holiday the next day. And I don't know if you know, Ben, I've actually been pushing for this on the WA Day weekend in the West over probably for maybe like the last 12 years. the Brisbane Lions' nightmare night on the injury front. Flesh it out, throw it out.
Flesh it out. I haven't seen a night like this in a long time. So Brandon Starcevic does his calf in the warm-up, pulls out, which Logan Morris comes in and makes his debut. We also have what? Noel Ransworth needing the head, concussed. He's gone. Then we also see two potential ACLs in the night with Darcy Gardner and Link McCarthy. So that is a dirty, dirty day. I haven't seen any confirmation as yet around whether those are confirmed ACLs today. But I wonder whether the Brisbane Lions do any internal investigation around the number of ACLs they've had. Because it's starting to stack up. And I just...
Will Ashcroft?
Yeah. Will Ashcroft, I think Kitty? I saw something that it was Kitty five Coleman? In 16 games for the Brisbane Lions now.
Weirdly, they're the only injuries they've really had, though. So I put a tweet out last night saying they lost four, basically, in the half. They wouldn't have had four first-choice players on their injury list in 5 years, I reckon.
Yeah, but what do you always say, Corbin? So what? Two's Plus, coincidence, three's pattern.
Yep.
This is five now.
Yeah.
Over a pretty short period of time, you would have to be thinking, look, are we doing something wrong in terms of our preparation that maybe is weakening the ACL or something's not quite right there. It may be pure coincidence, but when it's five in 16 games, it feels like a lot.
Chris Fagan in victory last night.
It's one of the more amazing and courageous wins. Well, I think it's the most amazing and courageous win I've ever seen, to be honest, by any group of players that I've had anything to do with. And I'm just so proud of them. You know, they're out on their feet. There'll just be massages this week. I don't think there'll be too much training and getting ready for Adelaide. We'll have to get them recovered. But the heart that they showed play in that manner.
I love the way that started, where he thought, you know what, how am I going to word this? He thought, you know what, no, it was the most courageous victory I've ever seen. So just put it straight into to that category. No hyperbole from Chris Fagan. That's a good game at the right time too, where they play Adelaide, both teams trying to revive their season. So really good game. That brings the curtain down on round nine coming up. Do you know what it was, Ben? You're a very well-read man.
Yeah.
That was the definition of a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah.
So a Pyrrhic victory is, you know, one at too great a cost to be worthwhile, where they, you know, talk about in times of war and everything else. And that's exactly what it was for Brisbane. So, win the game, but, gee, it came at a serious cost in the broader context of their season. Where are we going next? Logan Morris's debut. Flesh it out, throw it out.
Throw it out. We've got that. Greg's putting that on the rundown for Murph as well. So we'll speak to Murph about that.
Tom Hawkins' form, is it a concern? Flesh it out, throw it out.
Flesh it out. Yeah, it is, because life's about timing. And when you're at as an advanced age as Tom Hawkins, The questions will come when you go four games for the first time in your career without kicking a goal.
Yeah.
Like, they will.
I was hot on this last week. We did Geelong-Carlton, and I was tracking it in the ninth quarter without a goal, tenth quarter without a goal. So he went three games without a goal, which was a record in his career. He'd never, ever been three games without a goal, and now it's four. And this weekend's a celebration of Tom Hawkins. So on Friday night, he will equal Joel Selwood on 355 games for the most played ever in the history of the Cats. It's a home game. And all of a sudden now it's, like you said, it's, it's four in a row. And that doesn't happen too often. It's never happened in 354 games so far in Tom Hawkins' career. So we'll see how he goes up against a Port Adelaide backline, which that's been their Achilles heel in recent times, hasn't it?
Cameron and Hawkins both goalless on Saturday night. Well, bad day.
They get a chance to run into a team that is a little vulnerable against big key forwards. So let's see how they match up on Friday night. Ross Lyon saying that they don't want to be a namby-pamby.
Yeah, they don't want to be namby-pamby means soft. Yeah, I would have thought you'd known it because I would have thought you'd been called it a few times from time to time. It just means sort of a little soft, Corby. And this was in the wake of...
Like S-A-W-F-T soft.
Yeah, soft. In the wake of Darcy Wilson getting winded, and they wanted to bring him off the ground. The doctors started running him off, and the runner came out and said, "Leave him out there." Mm. And Ross said, "Look, we don't want to be namby-pamby."
Lacking in character directness or moral or emotional strength. Mm. Namby-pamby. Mm. If whatever the segue is, can we talk about Darcy Wilson?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if you can have a breakout game a couple of weeks after being nominated for a rising star, but that was it. Had 21, three goals, two. She went forward, took big marks overhead. We spoke to him post-game. He hasn't quite got the media performance yet to match the game because he's got this enormous game for a young man, and he was very softly spoken and very much an introvert, according to my source inside the Saints.
Yeah, quite an introvert.
Yeah,
interesting.
So,
he's very much the archetype of what Ross Lyon likes in a player. So when Ross Lyon goes to recruiters, he says, "Look, what I really want is running capability." So ability to have great endurance, ideally repeated speed endurance. That's what he's looking for. Darcy Wilson has a lot of those attributes, a great runner, and he's got some football nous as well, some game to go with it. Not too many introverts around here, are there?
No. Lockie Schultz, MRO decision. Flesh it out, throw it out?
Throw it out.
And Jamie Cripps, costing Jake Waterman a shot at goal late in the piece in the West Coast Essendon game. Flesh it out, throw it out?
Flesh it out. We've got an old friend, Corbin, whose nickname is Arnie, who has a saying which I love, and it just goes, D-U-M silent B.
Yeah.
That was just dumb.
Yep. They were coming at that stage in the game too. Like, a lot of people look at it short-sighted enough, Ben, to say, oh, if he kicked that goal and they got within six and it would have equaled up the game and everything else, they might have won by three or four goals if he'd kicked that, because there was still like 9 minutes left at the time and the Eagles were finishing all over the top and the Bombers tried to find ways to lose it. But they didn't. So I think that's a huge thing for Essendon. So we're 8 weeks into the season, the Bombers have lost only twice. And that's a huge spot to be in from where they've come from, the Bombers. They have also travelled four times in the first 8 weeks. Four travel games puts them equal with Fremantle, West Coast and Adelaide.
Yeah.
Port Adelaide have only travelled twice in the first 8 weeks of the season. So the Bombers have been on the road. They've dropped only two games so far. And that's a pretty good down payment on where they want to be. So there's 15 games left. They probably need to win half of those. So probably eight of the remaining 15 if they want to play finals. But as I always say, Ben, it's not about just qualifying for the Bombers. They need to qualify six and above. So,
so they get a home final.
So they get a home final.
And they're actually favourites to win that final. Yep. Jake Waterman, what a season he's having all of a sudden. Looks like...
Are you a buyer in the Bombers, just quickly, before we get back to the Eagles?
Hold.
Sometimes you just got to win, and then you build an enormous amount of confidence, and you can flush it out in other games. But I was happy enough that they got out of there with a victory.
Yep.
Plugger Waterman, by the way, as you said, what a year he's having.
G-train Waterman. But he's got concussion, delayed concussion apparently, and a little nick in his hamstring, which is a real shame because he was flying along.
Should I be worried about the Eagles this weekend? So Yo's hurt, Waterman's hurt.
Yep. Possibly.
And now all of a sudden you go, well, Yo was the thing that was different, and Waterman's been playing out of his skin, and without that, are they just going to look like the old Eagles?
Maybe.
They still have Harley Reid. Didn't we get excited about Harley Reid on the weekend with his fend off and push Ben Hobbs into next week? No one seemed to notice, though, that it was either him or Tim Kelly for large periods that probably needed to match up on Zach Merritt when he was running around and collecting heaps of the footy and kicking three.
Look at your little Don's colours coming out. Powerhouse Hobbs got shoved off the footy. Just quickly...
He was allowed to run around again, though, Merritt, and do whatever he liked.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Teams keep letting him do that. And people, a beautiful user.
And people say, oh, yeah, it's not that they let him run around. It's just his tank's so big he burns them off. Okay, well, implement some kind of a handoff system like they do with Dustin Martin or they do with all these other guys. You can't let him, with a 50-metre radius in the forward 50, collect the ball and have no one within spitting distance of him.
Did you get excited today with the news that the Don's supposedly tabling a bigger offer to Harley Reid?
Yeah, oh, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't be. Look, if he wants to come back home and he wants to play for Essendon, sure. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And Mark Murphy's about to join us next, the Carlton champion, of course, in his usual spot. Our Mad Mondays with Murph, right here on Corbin and Ben, ABC Sport.
Looking for an easy way to find out what's happening in the world of sport? Stay up to date with the week's best sports stories, highlights and analysis with the ABC Sport Newsletter.
Oh, that is amazing!
It's sports content to make you think or allow you not to. Delivered to your inbox every Saturday.
Game, set, bingo!
To sign up and get the latest sports news each week, head to abc.net.au/connect, scroll down and select ABC Sport.
Corbin and Ben for your Monday right here on ABC Sport. Catch up anytime in the best of ABC Sport folder, or you can just search Corbin and Ben in the ABC Listen app. You'll be able to catch up on any episode at your convenience. Hell of a weekend of footy, round 8 done.
Just quickly on that, Corbin, the numbers are skyrocketing. We are driving an F1 car in a go-kart race here on Corbin and Ben. Like, it's unfair.
We're trending well, must be said. We're on the up and up. So keep telling your friends and people you don't like about it. We appreciate every little bit that we can get. And your listenership, a lot of people here for this man every Monday. He is the 300 gamer, former Carlton captain, the man the coaches thought was the best player in the game back in 2011. His name is Mark Murphy, and he joins us on Corbin and Ben. Hello, Murph.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Always a pleasure to join you on a Monday afternoon.
It's our Mad Mondays with Murph. It was a good weekend of footy. I think we had two games decided by 6 points, one decided by 7, and one decided by 8. So pretty close round of footy.
But more importantly, Murph, you went to the A-League, so we weren't actually sure that competition was still running, but apparently it is.
It certainly is, and they were very good. The victory, they had 10 men down with a red card. I think it was in the first 30 or 35 minutes, so did really well to hang in there, score late in... normal period of time. I think it was in the 85th minute, and then to win it in penalty shootout. It was an awesome atmosphere. Loved it. So I thought that the game between Hawthorn and the Bulldogs wasn't going to offer up too much, and went to the A-League instead. But obviously the Hawks did a number on the Bulldogs.
Well, we do say that Victory fans are just frustrated Carlton fans, and it held true. Mark Murphy couldn't get the win on Friday night, so went along to the Victory and got the job done there. Before people get upset with me, I'm a round ball world game fan. I've got my Liverpool jumper on today. I used to call the A-League. I don't think it's been marketed as well as it could have been recently, which is why I made that comment, but don't get upset with me. Just on the Bulldogs, Murph, horror time. You've been there for the Blues. What are the Bulldogs going through today?
Oh, they'll be scratching their heads, wouldn't they? I think they would have certainly turned up thinking that they were going to get the job done. I think most Bulldog supporters would have been thinking the same thing, but yeah, they're going to cause a bit of stir this week, aren't they? There'll be a lot of media outlets coming for them at the moment. Luke Beveridge is obviously under a bit of the spotlight about why he can't get his troops to perform week in, week out. So, yeah, unfortunately for that footy club, there'll be a lot of questions that will be asked of them this week, and they'll just the only way they can respond is by winning the coming weekend. So they'll be pretty keen to get through their review, no doubt, today and tomorrow, and then look forward ahead to try and rectify the situation and come out there and try and play against the Tigers, who if they don't beat the Tigers next week or this weekend, the blowtorch will be even firmly more on them.
So I think they were 10th in the betting market at the start of the year for the Premiership. So it probably shows you, again, conventional wisdom, what sort of people thought of the Dogs in their list. I didn't have them in my top 8 estimates. I don't know if you guys did. And yet, I guess the part which doesn't add up here is their own expectations of how they're going. And Meat Baines has said routinely that he believes they're a top 8, fringe top 4 team. And yet they look a lot worse than that. When you look at the talent that they have on their roster and what's at their disposal, Murph, where should they be? I know this is a dangerous practice, but what do you think they're capable of given the players that they've got?
I look at their roster and I think they're probably a top six team, to be honest with you. And I think that's where a lot of the disappointment comes from. They've probably got the best player in the competition in Marcus Bontempelli. And then I suppose all the question marks about selection over the past month or even probably the last few years about certain blokes that look to be on the outer at various points throughout the season, they just can't find the right mix. And their selection's really almost inconsistent and they're getting inconsistent results. I'm not sure it's on the back of that, but those will be the questions that will be asked of Luke Beveridge and his charges at the moment, because they're too talented a list to be able to play the way in which they are at the moment. And I don't think I had them in my top eight, but I look at their midfield, especially what they've got in terms of their key targets up forward and down back. So they should be doing a lot better than what they're doing at the moment.
Murph, one of my favourite phrases is often you can lose a game, but you can't lose the locker room. So when you're internal and those little conversations start happening between players, the hallway conversations, how does it play out when you start to realise that a coach has lost the group, as some suspect Luke Beveridge might have?
It's the worst place you can be at a club when there is those hallway conversations or people who they tend to gather together and talk about why this bloke's not playing or why are we playing this way. As leaders of that football club, Marcus Bontempelli would just have to bring it up with his charges. I'm not sure if those conversations would be going on or what's happening. That's only just speculation. No one really knows, but there's no doubt you would think he'd be on the front foot about making sure that everyone's sticking together, having those conversations as a playing list or as a entire football club. Get it out in the open, talk about what you're not liking, what you want to see more from the bloke standing right next to you. So you'd be wanting to get on the front foot and not let those conversations fester, that's for sure.
Mark Murphy with us. It is our Mad Mondays with Murph right here on Corbin and Ben on ABC Sport.
Just one from out of that game as well, Murph. Late in the game, the Wizard Watson had a little muggle moment, nearly missed what could have been the winning goal. And James Sicily, his captain, had given it to him. He was providing a shepherd. And then he threw a tantrum on the spot. It was like a little toddler jumping up and down on the spot, flailing his arms around. A lot of people have questioned his body language in the wake of it. As a captain, how aware do you have to be of your body language and what you're portraying to the group broadly?
Yeah, you've certainly got to be aware of the way in which you react to certain things. It's obviously almost an involuntary action, wasn't it? He probably obviously didn't expect him to miss that. And no one probably did it there at the game. But I think that the one thing with James Sicily, he's an emotional character, isn't he? Like, we've seen that throughout his entire career. That's probably why some people were I don't know, surprised to see him named captain. But maybe that's why he's a good captain, because he wears his heart in his sleeve and the boys respond to him in that way. So that just might be a part of his leadership style. But I think that the next time someone misses a goal directly in front, maybe don't jump up and down like a little toddler, you said, Benny.
Not a good moment for Sicily. And by the way, he was awesome down the stretch. So Sam Mitchell made a huge move, swung him into the forward line. We haven't seen him do that at all this year. Usually it's Blake Hardwick who's been in the Adam Hunter swingman role. but James Sicily, who's banged up, had the sore shoulder, had his ankle restrapped on the run, goes forward, scored the last 7 points of the game. And they won by 7 points. Yeah. So how's it turned out to be the gap in the game and the move to send him forward? So great result for Sam Mitchell and the Hawks.
Some would say he's a genius, Sam Mitchell.
Yeah. Yep. We like Sammy Mitch, there's no doubt about that. Your Blues, Murph, and more so the man who grew up idolising you.
Yeah.
You were his favourite player, Whisper Dacos, who had another indelible moment. He's only 55 games in, 21 years of age, comes forward, kicks the match winner, hit the contest at speed, and I think the finish has probably been underrated.
Yeah.
So we've talked about, Dacos steps up, kicks the match winner, had a great night. High degree of difficulty at pace, sprinting to the boundary line, hooks it back through, and never ever looks like missing. Talk us through, I guess, what you saw on Friday night. No doubt you were there watching behind glass somewhere.
he just keeps on doing things that you just don't expect from someone so young. But because of what he's been able to do over a long period in such a short career, it's quite exciting to think we've got another 13 or 14 years of this. Looking ahead, but last stoppage of the game almost, you've got to have heavy legs, you've got to be tired. To be able to do that, hit the contest at pace, stay involved, and then to slot that, it's probably one of the harder kicks you're going to have in that in that pocket, running towards the boundary. But he's a class act, and his whole last quarter was just completely classy. I think he had 10 or 12 touches and clearances, contested ball. He's an absolute superstar and continually just breaks the heart of Carlton supporters who go there and watch watch him dominate the way in which he's going about at the moment. And the Pies are certainly well and truly back on track, aren't they?
Yeah, I just can't get my head past how he gets through the stoppage at such speed. I mean, he leaves Sam Walsh like poor old Sam's running in quicksand, which is not a knock at all on Sam Walsh. He's come back off barely any preseason. Just the way he's moving, Corb, was unbelievable. That
Sam was probably the second best player on the ground, I think, wasn't he? If Nick was the best player out there. And I know there's been a lot of focus on that one isolated stoppage, Murph, but I mean, the ball gets hit in a slightly different direction, someone doesn't tap it on and Sam gets the footy, we might be talking about a different result.
Hang on, I mean, the fourth quarter, I think it was 77 ranking points in the game to 14, the way of Dacos over Sam Walsh. So Sam Walsh was excellent, but in the final quarter winning time, Dacos had his number.
Stick up for your boy here, Murph.
Well, they're two of the best running midfielders in the game. Both of them, the way in which Sam Walsh has played since coming back from that back injury this year's been incredible. I think he's averaging 33 touches, but they're damaging touches, and he's an absolute superstar. But yeah, I think I watched that stoppage on numerous occasions. Nick Dacos just plays to his strengths. Why would you hover around? Like get on the move and just try and run through traffic. And I think probably Walsh, you got caught maybe just ball watching for half a second. And then when you're playing against a superstar like Nick Dacos is, you just can't afford to do that. But he just got in the fly and kept moving. And that's why he's so good, because you can't afford to give him a meter or two because you see the result.
What's that moment like, Murph, when you sort of realise you ball watched for half a second and your opponent's gone?
Yeah, there's nothing worse. Like he didn't do a lot. He didn't do a lot wrong, but you would have loved someone just to lay a body across him. That's why when you're watching these guys like a Nick Dacos, you just need to continually just body him and not let him have a path towards goal. So let him have boundary. Let him have defensive side of the stoppage. Don't let him get front of the stoppage, because you see that he can do some pretty amazing things.
They got disarmed at clearances the other night, the Blues. We don't see that happen too often. Were you surprised to see how much they were beaten in that area? I think the clearance numbers were about even, but Collingwood scored 44 points to 22 from clearance. So they scored twice as many points from that source where, the Blues, that's usually their weapon.
Yeah, they haven't been as emphatic in that area of the game so far this season, Carl, compared to what they were doing last year. They were well and truly a contested clearance-style game. This year they're probably more turnover. They're still really strong in the contest. But I thought when, Tom Mitchell's not playing and DeGoey's out, I thought that Carlton's dominance around the contest was going to really show out. But physically last year, Carlton just dominated Collingwood when they did beat them later in the year last year. But, you got to give Collingwood credit. They fought hard, but they got great ascendancy from those clearances. And they weren't just rubbish clearances. They were really positive ones in terms of getting good scoreboard pressure on the Blues.
Carlton's last five games at the MCG, 92,000, 96,000, 83,000, 87,000, 88,000. And they play Thursday night there again against Melbourne. 100,000 members, Murph, for the first time. I saw Mitch Cleary's story during the week with Brian Cook. Carlton keen to play more home games at the MCG. Are you a fan of that? Their Docklands deal is up this year. So at the moment, it's a 6-5 split. And Brian Cook said, look, at the very least, we want to flip those numbers and play 6 at the G and 5 at Docklands with the hope to play more and more at the MCG going forward.
Oh, that's got to be a minimum. When you've got 100,000 members, you've just got to be playing at the MCG as much as humanly possible. I think maybe a couple of games a year against a couple of the interstate sides, maybe the Suns or the Giants. But I think get to the G, you've got 100,000 members, give them an opportunity to get to the game and watch their team hopefully win week to week.
Yeah, of course you're happy with it as well, Murph. You've got the box at the G, so that just works out quite nicely, doesn't it?
Man, I was actually, the last time I was at the G, I was just in amongst it down there at, I think it was Bay 9, I think it was. So in the Shane Warne stand, just really embracing the cold weather and the Blues getting done against the Cats. But no, I'm not one of those blokes, Benny, that just sits behind the glass every week.
Our Mad Mondays with Murph right here on Corbin and Ben on ABC Sport. Ken Hinckley, did you see his comments back on Thursday night? Feels like a long time ago now, talking about the Thursday game on a Monday. We're closer to the next Thursday game than we are days since the last. But basically took full ownership for the injury of Connor Rosie. If you're apportioning blame today, Murph, as to why we're in the situation we're in with Connor Rosie's hamstring. Who is most to blame, do you think? I think it's very admirable that the coach says it's my fault, but is it the player? Is it the medicos? Is it the coach? Who's most responsible for the fact that we're ended up in this position where Connor Rosie's had the same injury two games in a row?
Yeah, I think Ken Hingley's got absolutely nothing to do with that decision whatsoever. So I think he's obviously tried to come out and own that to protect whether that's Connor or the medical staff that let him play. But yeah, I'd be fairly looking at probably the medical staff. But at the end of the day, it is Connor's decision. If he feels that he's fine to go, they would have done the appropriate, you know, sprint test or agility test and made sure that he was fine. But yeah, it's a real disaster almost for that footy club. He's such an important piece of their puzzle to make sure that they're a successful team. So yeah, I think it had nothing to do with Ken Hinckley. I'd be very surprised if he pushed him in any way to play. So it's probably more Connor's, I reckon, put the hand up and cop it, I think, which he did in the end.
Did you ever have a moment, Murph, where you put your hand up and said, yep, I'm fit to play, and then you got out there and thought, oh no, I'm not at all quite ready to go as I thought?
No, not at all. No, I think any time that you've got any form of doubt and you feel that you can't run out of game, I think you shouldn't be playing. So, who knows? It might have, Connor would have, as I said, he would have done the appropriate test with the medical staff throughout the week. You would have thought there's no way you'd rest it completely and then not give it a crack before actually playing. So, I certainly didn't do it. I can't think of too many blokes who would probably put themselves out there, you know, with, you know, being unsure about an injury going into a game.
We got a good topic for you here, Murph. One close to your heart. Great goals from the weekend. I know you managed to kick a couple of very fine goals in your career. A few against Fremantle, one against the Bombers that was quite memorable in the wet as well. I'm looking at three goals from the weekend. So Zach Merritt had a go from the pocket. Very fine goal, but probably upstaged. Bailey Fritsch had a little one that just hummed through from pressed up against the boundary line, which basically put the gap too large for Geelong late in the piece. And then the Dacos goal. If you're trying to stack them up, Murph, what were some of the better goals, do you think, out of those three from the weekend?
Oh, I'll go straight to Nick Dacos, to be honest with you. I know Bailey's kicked a pretty incredible goal late in that game as well. But with a minute odd to go, Carlton Collingwood, almost 90,000 there or whatever it was. And just the way in which he hit it at pace, one touch, straight in the boot, as difficult as you can do with heavy legs. Yeah. Nick Dacos gets my tip of the hat.
So I'm the same, bending the wrong way too. Like, he's snapping it where it swings the wrong way. So the margin for error is so small.
Yep. So we're all going Dacos 1, Fritsch 2, Merritt 3.
Yeah,
I mean, the most impressive part of Bailey's goal was that not a hair out of place. Like, the Buffon was just absolutely perfect after all of that.
He's got some dangerous product in there, doesn't he, Bailey? It's a good quaffed bit like yourself, Benny.
Yeah, and like Ben, similar skills, loyal to that hairdo as well. So he's been rolling with it over.
It's admirable. It's admirable, isn't it? To hang in there.
It is that kind of loyalty should be commended.
I've actually got myself, Nathan Buckley, and Shane Heal as the most loyal people to their haircuts over a long period of time.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Logan Morris, this was a feel-good footy story, which probably translates across all sort of levels of footy. Played VFL yesterday afternoon, Murph, for Brisbane. Ran 13 Ks in the VFL. Got some Maccas on the way to the AFL. Young Starcevic got hurt in the warm-up, came in, then ran another 9 Ks, making his AFL debut. And luckily, his folks were in town to watch him play in the Magoos. They got the call saying, you probably want to get to the Gabba because I'm also playing AFL footy later today. Surely you've witnessed stuff like this in your AFL. Like, it's even better at the professional level, obviously, knowing that it happens, you know, right down in low grades of footies with juniors and seniors and all the rest of it. But give us some of your best experiences, I guess, that you've seen in your time, Murph, of playing 2-in-1.
Yeah, firstly, what an incredible story that is to be able to play in your first game and to do that after a VFL performance and come out and play basically a full game of AFL as a young kid. Incredible. Nick Dygan actually was a late inclusion when Brock McLean got pulled out before our final against Richmond. And from all reports, he was halfway through a hot dog or a meat pie, I think, and then had to come down and kick four to sink the Tigers in that elimination final back in 2013. So that's probably one of the better ones I've been close to see that firsthand.
That's awesome. I think he had Will Ashcroft's boots.
Yeah.
He didn't even have his boots there, so they had to go and find someone else's wheels for him.
I immediately think of our colleague, two-game Tony. Tony Armstrong famously played two games in one day. We had Michael.
You got a good memory.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah.
It's a big head, and there's a lot that just gets stored away in there. We spoke to Michael Frederick post-game yesterday, Murph, and we were complimenting him about Josh Tracy, and he looks fit, looks svelte, like he's dropped a few kilos and playing really well too. And Michael Frederick said, look, I live with him. We've really honed in on our diet. It wasn't always that way. Once we decided to go pick up some fast food from the M restaurant, and unfortunately we pulled into the drive-thru, and the senior coach, Justin Longmuir, was in the car in front of us. And we realised we were caught red-handed at that point in time. Did you ever have a moment like that where you went to a pub when you shouldn't have, a bottle or something of the like, and got caught out with a senior coach or someone from the club?
No, not quite, but it does actually take me back to one of my first years, and we had, a few clinics in the morning, and then we were off to another few clinics in the afternoon. We only had a 20-minute period to get some lunch, so a few of the boys went through the McDonald's drive-thru out there in Bundoora Way, and they said, oh, your skipper's in here quite a bit, actually. They're like, oh, really? Yeah. On most afternoons. And that was when the great Lance Whitnell was skipper of the club.
Oh, no.
So got caught out from a few of the boys being out there at Bundoora Macca's and going to order some fast food on the way to another clinic. And poor old Lance copped a bit of feedback that the drive-through checkout person was quite frequently visited from the big Lance Whitnell.
In the list of like worst things you could have in your system before you play a game of footy, Macca's has got to be high up there, doesn't it?
Got to be high up there.
Yeah.
At least high sugar intake. So it might be one positive for him. But, incredible.
Kane Corns told me that if he felt like he'd had a good game, he would reward himself with like a donut on the way home. So I think that's a pretty low sort of treat. Like I'd be going a little higher than just single. I'll reward myself for a good quarter with a jam donut at the MCG.
I'll have a donut while I'm trying to work out what naughty thing I should eat. Like that's the holding pattern. Jeez.
Yep.
Good on you, Murph. Great hit out as always. I will see you at the footy. You're with us on Saturday, which is excellent.
What a treat.
Get to watch the Mighty Bombers. So we'll see how they go against the Giants. Really good weekend of footy, by the way. The top eight teams all play each other, which is perfect.
Yeah, I was just looking at that, and big Cal Ward's playing his 300th game too on Saturday Twilight. So looking forward to watching him run around game 300 and take on the Bombers, of course. It should be a cracker.
Old cement head and a couple of big heads will tip our lid to him as well. There's no doubt about that. Murph, look forward to seeing you at the footy. Good hit out once again.
Good on you, boys.
Not on you, Murph.
Patrick Stack here from ABC Sport Daily. If you like sport,
sort of everyone describes it in the peloton as the most beautiful race, and it's the race where the real cyclists come.
And great conversation.
Unfortunately for Jason Demetriou, I don't think South Sydney had much of another option but to pull the trigger.
Then I think you'll love ABC Sport Daily.
They've actually got statistics to show that he literally does try and hit most of his deliveries for four or six. So it's the kind of hitting that feels very next generation.
ABC Sport Daily. Get it on the Listen app.
Corbin and Ben, Monday and Thursday, 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, catch up anytime, podcast or best of ABC Sport folder or ABC Listen app, Ben. Just search Corbin and Ben.
You got confused because it's nearly 6 p.m.
It is. Insane Rugby League's coming up. I'll tell you about that in a minute.
We spoke to Mark Murphy about poor old Lance Whitnell getting caught out. It originated from the story from Michael Frederick, Fast Freddy or Rapid Rick. This is what he had to say post-game when we spoke to him.
I don't think I can take credit for that. His partner, Nikki Miller, she's awesome. She looks after us. I guess she keeps him in good nick. And, so a lot of that has gone a long way, which is good. It's funny, a couple of years ago, JT and I, on one of our travel trips, we got home pretty late and went to Macca's, and JL was actually in the drive-thru. And then there's another time where JG, our forwards coach, was in the seen us drive in there as well after one game. So I don't think we've been back there since. So, I guess that's helped.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Caught red-handed.
On Inzane Rugby League this week, Zane Bojack and former Raiders half Sam Williams are joined by Dolphins game development manager and former PNG Hunter CEO Shane Morris to explore the problems the NRL are having with expansion into the Pacific. Sydney Olympics gold medalist in beach volleyball Natalie Cook will be part of the show as the celebrity tipster. Can she be the first person to outdo Sam? So Sam's been in good form in the tipping. So that is all coming up next on Inzane Rugby League. And likewise, you can find that through the ABC Listen app or in the podcast store. Last one is our look ahead to round nine. So by the time we chat on Thursday, Ben, you're about to be on your way to the MCG for Carlton and Melbourne.
Oh, I'm excited for that. That is a massive game. Carlton are on a little bit of a skid. Melbourne are looking pretty impressive with that win over Geelong, so plenty in that.
Carlton, Melbourne on Thursday night. Then, of course, Friday night, we've got the doubleheader. Cats hosting the Power. Dockers host the Swans. And then we're into Saturday footy, which starts with the Hawks and the Saints down in Launceston, but then gets good in a hurry with the Bombers and the Giants. So all these top eight matchups. By the way, I reckon Brisbane-Adelaide's a sneaky good game on Sunday. Richmond Bulldogs has a bit in it. So a whole lot to chop up when we meet on Thursday. Chat to you then.
Looking forward to it. See you then, Corb.
In Zane Rugby League, up next.